They started off, the Surrounders doing a masterful job of surrounding, cutting Themis and the girl off from anyone who might be looking. They were a walking camouflage. Darfla began to needle Deer with caustic and, to Themis, cryptic remarks. Deer looked about to turn and put his pudgy fist in her face, and Themis nudged the girl to stop. "Woof, woof, a goldfish," she tossed off as a final insult. Answered Deer, sticking his tongue out. It was a huge, featureless block in the midst of completely empty ground. Something about it suggested that it was an edifice of total disinterest. Themis recalled buildings he had seen in his youth that had been vaguely like this one, buildings he would make a point of not bothering to enter. So uninteresting were they. Inside it was a cave. Stalactites hung down from the ceiling in wedge-shaped rockiness. Stalagmites pushed their way up from the floor, spiking the stone underfoot. A mud collar surrounded a small pool in which clear water rippled. The walls were hewn out of rock. The floor was sand-covered stone. They could have been 5 miles underground. It was another world. It was crammed with crackpots. Themis walked between two huge men wearing fezes and sword belts behind the clicking Deer and next to Darfla, who looked uneasy. Themis felt more than merely uneasy. He was terrified. "Deer!" It was Darfla. She had stopped, was being pushed unwillingly by the weight of people moving behind her. "I want this talked out right now, here, now, here, now, here, now." "Don't try that here, Darfla. We have ours too, you know." "All right. Straight then. Were you taking him to see Bulbak?" "Yes. Why?" "You know your uncle isn't reliable. He could say anything, Darfla. We have no fear, really, but why tempt the chances?" He pursed his pudgy lips and said, "We'll have to recondition your watcher, girl. I'm sorry." There was a murmur from the large, restless crowd. Themis didn't know what reconditioning was, nor what the whole conversation had been about, nor who these people were, but he recognized the watcher part and the part that something unpleasant was about to happen to him. He looked around for a way out, but there was none. He was effectively manacled by the sheer weight of numbers. The cave was filled and the walls were lined with people. All they had to do was move in and he'd be squashed. He remained very still, turned his inward eyes upward, and ran painstakingly over the list of his family lords, offering up to each of them paeans of praise and pleas for help and deliverance.
"No, no," Darfla was pleading. "He's not really. He's a Kyban. I wouldn't have been able to stand him, would I, if he were a real stuff?"
"Dear," bit the inside of his cheek and thought. "We thought so, too, when we got the list, but since he's been here, it's been too early to tell, and now you've let him too close to it all. We don't like this, Darfla, but—"
"Test him. He'll show you."
She was suddenly close to Deer, his hand in hers, her face turned down to the fat little man's pudgy stare.
"Please, Deer. For what uncle used to be."
Deer exhaled fully, pursed his lips again, and said, "All right, Darfla. If the others say it's all right, it's not my decision to make." He looked around. There was a mutter of assent from the throng. Deer turned to Themis, looking at the watcher appraisingly. Then, suddenly, "Here it is. We're mad. You must prove to us you are mad. You must do, five mad acts, truly mad, right here in the cave. You can do anything but harm one of us or try to escape, and we're mad, so we'll know if they're mad acts or not. Now, go on."
"Tell him the rest, Deer. Tell him—" Darfla began.
"Quiet, woman. That's all there is, watcher. Go on." He stood back, arms folded across his round little belly.
"Mad? What kind of madness? I mean, like what? I can't do any—"
Themis looked at Darfla.
Something became unhinged within him at the sight of her about to cry. He thought for a while. The crowd became impatient. Voices called out things from the pack. He thought longer. Then, in an absolutely wonderful way, his face smiled all the way from his mouth to his hairline. Calmly, he walked over to Darfla and began undressing her. The clack of jaws falling was an audible thing in the sudden silence of the cave. Themis stripped her piece by piece, carefully knotting and pulling each piece of clothing before he went on to the next. Blouse, knot and pull tight. Belt, knot and pull tight. Skirt, knot and pull tight. Darfla offered no resistance, but her face went stony and her jaw muscles worked rhythmically. Eventually, she was naked to the skin. Themis bent down, made sure each item of clothing was securely knotted. Then he gathered it all up in a bundle and brought the armful to the girl. She put out her arms, and he dropped the bundle into them. "Knots to you," he said. "One," said Deer. Themis could feel small generators in his head begin to spin, whir, and grind as they phased up to a monstrous, pounding headache. He stood, spraddle-legged, in the open area among the crackpots, a tall blue-haired man with a nose just a trifle too long and cheeks just a trifle too sunken, and rubbed his a-trifle-too-long nose in deep concentration. Again, he smiled. Then he spun three times on his toes, badly, and made a wild dash for one of the onlookers. The crackpot looked around in alarm, saw his neighbors smiling at his discomfort, and looked back at Themis, who had stopped directly in front of him. The crackpot wore a shirt and slacks of motley, a flat mortarboard-type hat askew over his forehead. The mortarboard slipped a fraction of an inch as he looked at Themis. The watcher stood before him, intently staring at his own hand. Themis was clutching his left elbow with his right hand. His left hand was extended, the fingers bent up like spikes to form a rough sort of enclosure. "See my gugglefish?" asked Themis. The crackpot opened his mouth once, strangled a bit, closed his mouth, strangled a bit, opened his mouth again. Nothing came out. Themis extended his hand directly under the other's nose. It was obviously a bowl he was holding in his hand. "See my gugglefish?" he repeated. Confused, the crackpot managed to say, What gugglefish? I don't see any fish." "That isn't odd," said Themis, grinning. "They all died last week." Over the roar of the crowd, the voice of a blocky-faced man next to the motley wearer rose. "I see your gugglefish right there in the bowl. I see them. Now what?" "You're crazier than I am," said Themis, letting the mythical bowl evaporate as he opened his hand. "I don't have any bowl."
"Two,"
said Deer, his brow furrowed. Without wasting a moment, Themis began shoving the crackpots toward the wall. Without resistance, they allowed themselves to be pushed a bit. Then they stopped. "For this one, I'll need everyone's help," said Themis. "Everybody has to line up. I need everyone in a straight line, a real straight line." He began shoving again. This time, they all allowed themselves to be pushed into a semblance of order, a line straight across the cave.
"No, no," muttered Themis slowly. "That isn't quite good enough. Here."
He went to one end, began moving each crackpot a bit forward or backward till they were all approximately in the same positions of the line. He went to the right end and squinted down the line. "You there. Fourth from the end. Move back a half step, will you? Yes, that's just... Stop. Fine. Now you," he pointed to a fellow with yellow bagged-out trousers and no shirt.
"Move up just a smidgy...
No, stop. That's just perfect." He stepped back away from them
and looked along both ways, surveying them as a general surveys his troops.
You're all nicely in line. All the same. The crackpots are neatly maneuvered into being regimented stuffed shirts. Thank you, he said, grinning widely.
Three, said Deer, blushing and furrowed at the same time.
Themis was pacing back and forth by the time the crowd had hurriedly and self-consciously gotten itself out of rank and clumped around the cave again. He paced from one huge stalagmite, kicking it on turning to the edge of the mud-surrounded pool, and began scrabbling in the mud at his feet. He scooped up two huge handfuls of the runny stuff and carried it a few feet away to a rock surface. Plunking it down, he hurried back for another handful. This he carried with wild abandon, spraying those near him with drops of the gunk till he was back where he had deposited the previous load. Then he stopped, considered for a long moment, then placed the mud gingerly atop the other at an angle. Then he hurried back for more. This he again placed with careful deliberation, tongue poking from a corner of his mouth, eyes narrowed in contemplation. Then another load, and another, each one placed with more care than the last, till he had a huge structure over 4 feet tall. He stepped back from it, looked at it, raised his thumb and squinted at it through one eye. Then he raced back to the deep hole that had been gouged out of the mud and took a fingerful of the stuff. He ran back, patted it carefully into place, smoothed it with an experienced hand, and stepped back with a sigh and a look of utter contentment and achievement.
Ah, just the way I wanted it, he said.
And jumped into the hole.
Four,
said Deer, tears of laughter streaming down his cheeks. Themis sat in the hole, legs drawn up and crossed, hands cupping his chin, elbows on his knees. He sat, and sat longer, and still sat, and remained seated. Deer walked over to him and looked down. What is the fifth act of madness?
There isn't any.
Deer's head seemed to revolve on his neck in a blur, unexpectedly producing the sound of a large threshing machine, but actually not.
There isn't any?
I'm going to sit here and not do any more.
The crowd murmured again.
What?
Cried Deer.
What do you mean you won't do any more? We set you five. You've done four. Why no fifth?
Because if I don't do a fifth, you'll kill me. And I think that's mad enough even for you.
Though Deer's back was turned and he was walking away, Themis was certain he heard five from somewhere.
They want you to come back here again after you've seen my uncle, said Darfla, a definite chill in her voice.
They were walking briskly down a moving traverseway, the girl a few steps ahead of the watcher. Themis knew he had a small problem on his hands.
Look, Darfla, I'm sorry about that back there, but it was my life, or a little embarrassment for you. It was the first thing I could bring to mind, and I had to stall for time. I'm really sorry, but I'm sure they've seen a woman naked before, and
you must have been naked before a man before, so it shouldn't...
Themis fell silent. They continued down the traverse way, Darfla striding forward, anger evident in each long step. Finally, the girl came to an intersection of belt strips and agilely swung across till she was on the slowest moving outer belt. She stepped off, took several rapid steps to lose momentum, and turned to Themis.
We'd better stop in here for a moment and get you something to wear over that watcher uniform.
It isn't hard to avoid the stuffed shirts, she said, looking at him with disparagement.
But there's no sense taking foolish chances.
She indicated a small shop that was all window and no door, with a hastily painted message across one of the panes. Elgis the Costumer, and If We Don't Got It, It Ain't Worth Having.
They entered through a cleverly designed window that spun on a center pin. Inside the shop, Darfla spoke briefly to a tall, thin crackpot in black half-mask and body-tight black suit. He disappeared down a shaft in the floor from which stuck a shining pole. The girl pulled a bolt of cloth off a corner of the counter and perched herself with trim legs crossed. Themis stood, looking at the shop. It was a costumer's, all right, and with an arrangement and selection of fantastic capacities. Clothing ranged from rustic Kyben farm garb to the latest spun plastine fibers from all over the galaxy. He was marveling at the endless varieties of clothing when the tall, thin crackpot slid back up the pole. He stepped off onto the floor, much to Themis's amazement, and no elevator disc followed him. It appeared that the man had come up the pole the same way he had gone down, without mechanical assistance. Themis was long past worrying over such apparent inconsistencies. He shrugged and looked at the suit the fellow had brought up with him. 10 minutes later, he looked at the suit on himself in a full-length mirror cube and smiled at his sudden change from underclass watcher Themis to a sheeted and fetish-festooned member of the Toad Revelers cult found on Fuba 4. His earrings hung in shining loops to his shoulders, and the bag of toad shavings on his belt felt heavier than he thought it should. He pulled the drawstring on the bag and gasped. They were toad shavings. He tucked the bottom folds of the multicolored sheet into his boot tops, swung the lantern onto his back, and looked at Darfla in expectation. He caught her, grinning, and when he too smiled, her face went back to its recent stoniness. Darfla made some kind of arrangement with Elgus, shook his hand, bit his ear, said, "How are the twins, Elgus?" To which the costumer replied, "Eh," in a lackadaisical tone, and they left. The rest of the trip through the patchwork quilt of Velasa was spent in silence. The crackpots were not what they seemed. Of that Themis was certain. He had been very stupid not to notice it before, and he thought the Watchers must be even more stupid for not having seen it in all their hundreds of years on Kaiba. But there was a factor he did not possess. Garbage and water that ran in different directions through the same pipe, a beggar that knew how many coins he had in his pocket, a girl who could rip out the innards of a dicto box, leaving it so it would work, and somehow he was now certain it would work, without a human behind it, and a full-sized cave built inside a concrete block. These were not the achievements of madmen. But they were mad. They had to be. All the things which seemed mysterious and superhuman were offset by a million acts of out-and-out insanity. They lived in a world of no standardization, no conformity at all. There was no way to gauge the way these people would act, as you could with the Kyben of the stars. It was insane. Themis's nose itched in confusion, but he refrained from unseemly scratching.
"Don't I look like Santa Claus?" he said.
"Who?" asked Themis, looking at the roly-poly florid face and bushy beard. He tried to ignore the jaggedly yellow scar that reached from temple to temple.
"Santa Claus! Santa Claus, you lout! Haven't you ever heard of the Earthmen's mythical hero, Santa Claus? He was the hero of the Battle of the Alamo. He discovered what they call the Great Pyramid of Giza. He was the greatest drinker of milk out of wooden shoes that planet ever knew."
"What's milk?" asked Themis.
"Lords, what a clod!"
He screwed up his lips in a childish pout.
"I did immense research work on the subject. Immense!"
Then he muttered under his breath, almost an afterthought,
"Immense."
The old man was frightened.
It showed even through the joviality of his garb and appearance. Themis could not understand the old man. He looked as though he would be quite the maddest of the lot, but he talked in a soft, almost whispering voice, lucidly, and for the most part of familiar things. Yet there was something about him which set him apart from the other crackpots. He didn't have the wild-eyed look. No one was saying anything, and the sounds of their breathing in the basement hideout was loud in Themis's ears.
"Are you Bullback, the steel pincher?" the watcher asked, to make conversation. It seemed like the thing to say.
The bearded oldster shifted his position on the coal pile on which he was sitting, blackening his beard, covering his red suit with dust. His voice changed from a whisper to a shrill.
"A spy! A spy! They've come after me. You'll do it to me. You'll bend it. Get away from me. Get away from me. Get away from me. Get away from me!"
The old man was peering out from over the top of the pile, pointing a shaking finger at Themis.
"Uncle Bullback!"
Darfla's brows drew down, and she clapped her hands together. The old man stopped shouting and looked at her.
"What?"
he asked, pouting childishly.
"He's no spy, whatever he is," she said, casting a definitely contemptuous glance at Themis.
"He was a watcher alerted to find you. I liked him," she said, looking toward the ceiling to find salvation for such a foul deed. "And I thought that it was about time you stopped this nonsense of yours and spoke to one of them. So I brought him here."
"Nonsense? Nonsense, is it? Well, you've sealed my doom, girl. Now they'll bend it around your poor uncle's head as sure as Kubis and Pura rise every morning. Oh, what have you done?"
The girl shook her head sadly.
"Oh, stop it, will you? No one wants to hurt you. Show him your steel pinching."
"No," he answered, pouting again. Themis watched in amazement. The man was senile. He was a tottering, doddering child. Of what possible use could he be? Of what possible interest could he be to both the watchers and the crackpots who had tried to stop Darfla's bringing him here? Suddenly, the old man smiled secretly and moved in closer, sidling up to the watcher as though he had a treasure everyone was after. He made small motions with his pudgy fingers, indicating he wanted Themis's attention, his patience, his silence, and his ear in that order. It was a most eloquent motioning, and Themis found he was complying, though no vocal request had been made. He bent closer. Uncle Bullback dug into a pocket of the red coal-coated jacket and fished out a cane-shaped, striped piece of candy.
"Want a piece of candy? Huh? Want it? Huh?"
Themis felt an urge to bolt and run, but he summoned all his dignity and said,
"I'm Themis, underclass watcher, and I was told you pinch steel. Is that right?"
For a moment, the old man looked unhappy that the watcher did not want any candy. Then suddenly his face hardened. The eyes lost their twinkle and looked like two cold diamonds blazing at him. Bullback's voice, too, became harder, more mature, actually older.
"Yes, that's right. I pinch steel, as you put it. You wonder what that means, eh?"
Themis found himself unable to talk. The man's whole demeanor had changed. The watcher suddenly felt like a child before a great intellect. He could only nod.
"Here, let me show you."
The old man went behind the furnace and brought out two plates of steel. From a workbench along one wall, he took a metal punch and a double-headed hammer. He threw down one of the plates and handed Themis the awl and the maul.
"Put a hole in this with that punch," he said, motioning Themis toward the other plate, which he had laid flat on the workbench.
Themis hesitated.
"Come, come, boy, don't dawdle."
The watcher stepped to the workbench, set the punch on the plate, and tapped lightly till he had a hole started. Then he placed the punch in it again and brought the hammer down on its head with two swift strokes. The clangs rang loud in the dim basement.
The punch sank through the plate and went a quarter inch into the table.
I didn't hit it very hard, Themis explained, looking over his shoulder at Santa Claus.
That's all right. It's very soft steel, too many impurities. Kyben's spacecraft are made of a steel which isn't too much better than this, though they back it with strong reinforcers. Now, watch.
He took the plate in his hand, holding it between thumb and forefinger at one corner, letting it hang down. With the other hand, he pinched it at the opposite corner, pressing thumb and forefinger together slightly. The plate crumbled to dust, drifting down over the old man's pinching hand in a bright stream. Themis's mouth opened of its own accord. His chest tightened. Such a thing wasn't possible. The old man was a magician. The dust glowed up at him from the floor. It was slightly luminous. He goggled, unable to help himself.
Now, said Bulbak, taking the other plate, put a hole in this one.
Themis found he was unable to lift the hammer. His hands refused to obey. One did not see such things and remain untouched.
Snap out of it, boy. Come on, punch. The old man's voice was commanding.
Themis broke his trance. He placed the punch on the second plate and in three heavy blows had gone through it and into the table again.
Fine, fine, said Uncle Bulbak, holding the second plate as he had the first. He pinched it with a slight revolving movement of the fingers. The steel seemed to change. It stayed rigid in shape, but the planes of it darkened, ran together. It was a flat piece of metal, but suddenly it seemed to have depths, other surfaces.
Bulbak held it out to Themis.
Put another hole in it.
Themis took it with wonder and laid it down on the workbench. It seemed heavier than before. He brought the hammer down sharply three times. The metal was unmarred. He set the awl and hammered again, harder, half a dozen times. He was sweating. Veins stood out on his neck. He took the punch away. Its point was dulled. The punch was slightly bowed. The metal was arrogantly unscarred.
It's...
he began, his tongue abruptly becoming a wad of cotton batting in his mouth. Bulbak nodded.
It's changed, yes. It is now harder than any steel ever made. It can withstand heat or cold that would either melt to paste or shatter to splinters any other metal. It is impregnable. It is the ideal war metal. With it, an army is invincible. It is the closest thing to an ultimate weapon ever devised, for it is unstoppable. A tank composed of this metal would be a fearsome juggernaut. A spaceship of it could pierce the corona of a sun. A soldier wearing body armor of it would be a Superman.
He stood back, his lips a thin line, letting Themis look dumbfoundedly at the plate he held.
But how do you... How can you... It's impossible. How can you make this? What have you done to it?
Themis felt the room swirl around him, but that defied the laws of the universe.
Sit down. I want to talk to you. I want to tell you some things.
He put one arm around Themis's shoulders, leading him to a flight of stairs to sit down. Themis looked at Darfla. She was biting her lip. Was this the talk the crackpots didn't want him to have with Uncle Bulbak?
Themis sensed, this is it. This is an answer. Perhaps not the answer to all that troubled him, but it was unquestionably an answer.
Suddenly, he didn't want to know. He was afraid, terribly afraid. He stammered,
Do you think you should? I'm a watcher, you know, and I don't want to...
The old man cut him off with a wave of his hand and pushed him down firmly.
You think you're watching us, don't you? Began Bulbak. I mean, you think the Watcher Corps was assigned here to keep an eye on all the loonies, don't you? To keep the black sheep in the asylum so the star-flung Kyben don't lose face or esteem in the galaxy, isn't that it?
Themis nodded reluctantly, not wanting to insult the old man. Bulbak laughed.
Fool! We want you here! Do you think for a moment we'd allow you blundering, pompous snoopers around if we didn't have a use for you? Let me tell you a story, the old man went on. Hundreds of years ago, before what you blissfully call the Kyben explosion into space, both crackpots and stuffed shirts lived here, though they weren't divided that way back then. The stuffed shirts were the administrators, the implements of keeping everything neatly filed and everyone in line. That type seems to gravitate toward positions of influence and power. The crackpots were the nonconformists. They were the ones who kept coming up with the new ideas. They were the ones who painted the great works of art. They were the ones who composed the most memorable music. They were the ones who overflowed the lunatic asylums. They thought up the great ideas, true, but they were a thorn in the side of the stuffs because they couldn't be predicted. They kept running off in all directions at once. They were a never-ending systemic problem. They couldn't be regimented, not a bit, not a tot. So the stuffs tried to keep them in line, gave them tedious little chores to do, tried to compartmentalize them in thought, in habit, in attitude. The non-cons snapped. There is no record of it, but there was almost a war on this planet that would have wiped out every Kyben of both breeds to the last man.
He rubbed a hand across his eyes, as if to wipe away unpleasant images. Themis and Darfla listened intently, their eyes fastened to those of the old man in his ridiculous costume. Themis knew Darfla must have heard the story before, but still she strained to catch every sound Bulbak made.
Luckily, the cooler heads won. An alternate solution was presented and carried out. You've always thought the Kyben left their misfits, the crackpots, behind, that we were left here because we weren't good enough, that we would disgrace our hard-headed pioneers before the other races. Isn't that the story you've always heard? That we are the black sheep of the Kyben?
He laughed, shaking his head.
Fools! We threw you out! We didn't want you tripping all over our heels, annoying us. We weren't left behind. You were thrown away.
Themis's breath caught in his throat.
It was true. He knew it was true. He had no doubts. It was so.
In the short space of a few seconds, the whole structure of his life had been inverted. He was no longer a member of the elite core of an elite force of an elitist society. He was a clod, an unwanted superfluity, a tin soldier, a carbon copy. He started to say something, but Bulbak cut him off.
We have nothing against ruling the galaxy. We like the idea, in fact. Makes things nice when we want something unusual and it takes influence to get it quickly, but why should we bother doing the work when we can pull a string or two and one of you armor-plated puppets will perform the menial tasks? Certainly we allow you to rule the galaxy. It keeps you out of trouble and out of our hair. You rule the galaxy, but we rule you.
Thunder rolled endlessly through the Watcher's head. He was being bombarded with lightning, and he was certain any moment he would rip apart. It was all too much, all too suddenly. Bulbak was still talking.
We keep the Watcher Corps on other worlds both for spying purposes and as a cover-up, so we can have a Watcher Corps here on Kaiba without attracting any attention to ourselves. A few hundred of you aren't that much bother, and it's ridiculously easy to avoid you when we wish to. Better than a whole planet of you insufferable bores.
He stopped again and pointed a pudgy finger at Themis's chest armor.
We established the Watcher Corps as a liaison between us.
when we had innovations, new methods, concepts ready for use, and you, with your graspy little hands always ready to accept what the lunatics back home had come up with. Usually the ideas were put into practice, and you never knew they originated here. We made sure the Watcher's basic motto was to watch, 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 whatever we did, to save ourselves the trouble of getting the information back where it would do the most good, undistorted. And believe me, if we didn't want you to see something, it wasn't hard to hide it from you. You're really quite simple and stupid animals. So when we had a new invention or concept, all we had to do was walk into a public square and demonstrate it for you. Pegalacy, Pegaladoo. Themis mused aloud, interrupting the old man.
But what does, well, stacking juba fruits in the square demonstrate?
We wouldn't expect your simple-celled minds to grasp something like that immediately, answered Bulbeck. But I happen to know Shella, who did that, and I know what he was demonstrating. He was illustrating a new system of library filing, twice as efficient as the old one. He knew it would be dictated, sent back to Kyben Central, and finally understood for what it was. We give you enough clues. If something seems strange, think about it a while, and a logical use and explanation will appear. Unfortunately, that is the one faculty the star-flung Kyben are incapable of using. Their minds are patterned, their thoughts set in tracks. The laugh was a barb this time.
But why are you all so mad?
Themis asked, a quavering note in his voice. Beginning to crack, boy. I'll tell you why we're mad, as you put it. We're not mad. We're just doing what we want, when we want, the way we want. You rigid thinkers can't recognize the healthy sanity of that. You think everyone has to wear a standardized set of clothes, go to his dentist a specified number of times, worship in delineated forms, marry a specified type of mate, in other words, live his life in a mold. The only way to stimulate true creativeness is to allow it to grow unchained with restrictions. We're not mad at all. We may put on a bit. Just a cover from you boobs, but we're saner than you. Can you change the molecular structure of a piece of steel just by touching it at a juncture of atom chains?
Is that how you did it? Themis asked.
Yes. How far could I have gotten on a thing of this kind if I'd grown up in a culture like the one you've always known? For every mad thing you see on this world, there is a logical, sane answer.
Themis felt his knees shaking. This was all too much to be taken at one sitting. The very fiber of his universe had come untined and had raveled down to the grainy core. He looked at Darfla for the first time in what seemed an eternity and found it impossible to tell what she was thinking.
Why haven't you shown this steel-pinching to the Watchers if you want them to know all the new concepts?
The incredulous Themis questioned. Bulbeck's face suddenly went slack. The eyes became glassy and twinkly again. His face became flushed. He clapped his hands together childishly.
Oh, no! I don't want that!
But why? Demanded Themis. Again, the old man's face changed. This time, abject terror shone out. He began to sweat.
They're gonna chase me and bend a bar of iron around my head.
He leaped up and ran in a flurry back to the coal pile, where he burrowed into the black dust and peered out, trembling.
But that's crazy. No one wants to bend a bar of iron around your head. Only a maniac would keep a secret like that because of a crazy reason like that.
Exactly, came Darfla's voice from behind him, sadly. That's just it. Uncle is crazy. They had wanted to see Themis after his talk with Uncle Bulbeck,
and though Darfla had taken pains to cover their tracks, a group of crackpots was waiting outside the house when they emerged. Themis was white and shaking and made no movement of resistance as they were hustled into a low-slung bubble roadster and whisked back to the cave. "Well, did he talk to that mad genius?" asked Deer. Darfla nodded sullenly.
"Just as you said, he knows."
Deer turned to Themis. "Not quite all, however. Do you think you can take more, Watcher?" Themis felt distinctly faint.
One microscopic bit more added to the staggering burden of revelation he had had tossed on him, and he was prepared to sink through the floor. However, Deer was not waiting for an answer. He motioned to a man in a toga and spiked belt who came toward Themis.
"See this man?" Deer asked. Themis said yes. Deer tapped the man lightly on the chest. "Senior Watcher, first grade, Norsum. Lately disappeared from the barracks at Kaiba Base Velasa." He pointed to three others standing together near the front of the crowd. "Those three were top men in the Corps over a period of 10 years. Now they're crackpots."
Themis's eyebrows and hands asked, "But how?"
"There is a gravitating factor among Kaiben," Deer explained. "There are crackpots who are brought up as stuffs, who realize when they get here that their thinking has been fettered. Eventually they come to us. They come to us for the simple reason that the intellect rises through the Watcher ranks, and for several reasons gets assigned here. We've made sure the smartest boys get their final assignments with us. On the other side of the ledger, there are non-cons who go psycho from the responsibility of being a free thinker. They want supervision. They're thinking directed. They eventually wind up as Kaiben after minor reconditioning, so they don't remember all this." He waved his hand to indicate the cave. "Now they're somewhere out there and probably quite happy."
"But how can you make a Watcher disappear so completely when the whole garrison is looking..."
"Simple," said a voice from behind Themis. Supervisor Firth just stood, smiling. Themis just stood, choking. The elder Watcher grinned at the confusion swirling about Themis's face. Themis's face could at times be very animated, even active.
When were you..."
Themis stuttered. Firth raised a hand to stop him. "I was an unbending stuff for a good many years, Themis, before I realized the crackpot in me wanted out." He grinned widely. "Do you know what did it? I was kidnapped, put in a barrel with a bunch of chattering pegolas, and forced to think my way out. I finally made it, and when I crawled out all covered with pegola dung, those grinning maniacs helped me up and said, 'More fun than a barrel of pegolas.'" Themis began to chuckle. "That did it," said Firth.
"But why do you send men like Alex back to the mines? You must know how horrible it is. That isn't at all consistent."
Firth's mouth drew down at the corners. "It is when you consider that I'm supposed to be the iron hand of the Watcher garrison here on Kaiba. We have to keep the stuffs in line. They have to be maneuvered while they think they're maneuvering us. And Alex was getting too far out of control. Do you know how close to being killed you came when we brought you here the first time?" Deer said. Themis turned back to the pock-faced little man.
"No, I thought you'd just send me back and let the Corps deal with me."
"Hardly. We aren't afraid of our blundering brothers with the armored hides, but we certainly don't take wide chances to attract attention to ourselves. We like our freedom too much for that. You see, we aren't play-acting at being odd. We actually enjoy and live the job of being individuals. But there is a logic to our madness. Nothing we do is folly."
"But," Themis objected, "what are the explanations for things like..."
And he finger-listed several things that had been bothering him. "The garbage is negatively polarized, so it touches nothing but its side of the sewer pipes," explained Firth. "The beggar, who, by the way, is a professional numismatist, can sense the structural aura of various metals,
That's how he knew how many and what type coins you had in your pocket. The cave here is merely an adequate job of force-moving large areas of soil and rock and atomic realignment. He explained for a few more minutes, Themis's astonishment becoming deeper and deeper at each further revelation of what he had considered superhuman achievements. Finally, the young watcher asked,
"But why haven't these discoveries been turned over to Kyvan Central?"
"There are some things our little categorizing brothers aren't ready for as yet," explained Deer. "Even you were not ready. Chance saved you, you know."
Themis looked startled. "Chance?"
"Well, chance and your innate intelligence, boy. We had to see if there was enough non-con in you to allow you to live. The reconditioning in your case would have been, something of a failure. The 5 mad acts you were to perform not only had to be mad, they had to be logically mad. They each had to illustrate a point."
"Wait a minute," said Themis. "I had no idea what I was going to do. I just did it, that's all."
Quite right. But if you didn't know, at least your subconscious was able to put 2 and 2 together and come up with the proper 4. The acts you did demonstrated you had courage enough to be a non-con, that you were smart enough to maneuver us crackpots, so it would be easy enough for you to help us maneuver the stuffs, that you could be a non-con thinker when you had to be, and even you knew you were too valuable to kill. Even if you weren't in on it, your subconscious and the rest of us were."
But what I don't get is, why did you try to stop me from seeing Bulbak and then let me go, and why does Bulbak hide from you and the Watchers both?"
"One at a time," replied Deer. "Bulbak hides only because, well, he is mad. There are some like that in every group. He happens to be a genius, but he's also a total madman. We don't try to keep tabs on him because we already have the inventions he's come up with, but we don't put him out of the way because he might get something new one of these days we don't have. And then, too, kindly, he was a great man once, long before..." He stopped suddenly, realizing he had slid over the line from explanation to bathos. "We're not barbarians, nor are we a secret underground movement. We don't want to overthrow anything. We just want to do as we please. As long as you don't hurt anyone, where's the harm in just being kindly and gentle? If our brothers feel like foaming up and ruling star systems, all well and good. It makes it easier for us to obtain the things we want, so we help them in a quiet way. Bulbak isn't doing anyone any harm, but we didn't think you were ready to be exposed to too much non-con thinking all at once, as we knew Bulbak would do. He always does." "But Darfla was so concerned, and she seemed to like you, so we took a chance. It seemed to work out, luckily for you." Themis looked at the girl. She was staring at him as though she were covered in a thin layer of ice. He smiled to himself. Any amount of ice can be thawed by the proper application of intensive heat. "We didn't want you to see him at first," Deer went on, "because we knew he would dump the cart. But when you showed us you were flexible enough to do the 5 mad acts, we knew you could take what Bulbak had to say, and we let him explain it instead of us, because he's one damned fine storyteller. He can hold the interest. He's a born minstrel, and you'd believe him before us."
"But why did he tell me all that? I thought you wanted it all kept quiet. He hardly knew me, and he explained the whole situation the way it really is. Why?"
Themis inquired. "Why? Because he's completely out of his mind, and he's a big mouth to boot," Deer stated. "We tolerate Bulbak, but we make sure he keeps away from the Watchers for the most part. If he does get through, though, it eventually shuttles to Firth and we snap a lid on it. I suppose he was ready to tell you because Darfla brought you to him. He has a soft spot for her."
What I want to know is, why did Darfla take you off your rounds in the first place?
Darfla looked up. She had been idly running her toe through the mud near the pool.
I went through his dossier. He was too brilliant for the Corps. His record indicated any number of checkpoints of upper-level intelligence, so I went and found him. He didn't react as most stuffs would have when I applied a few stimuli, such as ruining his dicto box.
Themis winced at the memory of the dicto box.
But what made you look up his dossier? Demanded Firth. Darfla hesitated, and a gold blush crept up her cheeks.
I saw him get off the ship from Panaris Base. I rather liked his appearance, you know.
She looked down again, embarrassed. Deer made a gun with thumb and forefinger, pointed it at her.
If you don't stop taking these things into your own hands, there's a group who looks into things like that. We'd have gotten to him in time.
Themis rubbed his nose in amazement.
I just can't believe all this. It's so fantastic. So unreal.
No more unreal to believe every man is a single brain with individual thoughts than to believe he's a member of a group mind with the same thoughts for all.
He clapped the watcher on the back.
Are you prepared to drop your life as a watcher and become one of us? I think you'll be quite a find. Your five acts were the maddest we've seen in a long time.
But I'm not a crackpot. I'm a stuffed shirt. I've always been one.
Bosh. You were brought up to think you were one. We've shown you there are other ways to think. Now use them.
Themis considered. He'd never really had anything as a member of the Kyban race. He was, told from birth, one of the chosen, one of the glorious, one of the rulers of the universe, yet never comfortable wearing that mantle, always spinning downward with a melancholy, constant unease, and always a fear of the mines. These people all seemed so free, so clever, so...
Can you take me out of sight of the core?
Easiest thing in the world, said Firth, to make you drop out of sight as Themis the Watcher, only to reemerge as, shall we say, Gugglefish, the crackpot's maddest mountebank.
Themis's face broke into the first full, unreserved smile he could recall.
It's a deal, I suppose. I've always wanted to live in a madhouse. The only thing that bothers me is Uncle Bulbak.
You fool the stuffs by pretending madness, and, well, you consider Bulbak mad, so perhaps...
He stopped when he saw the perplexed looks that came over the crackpots' faces. It was a germ of thought.
Welcome home, Nutjob, said Deer, and kissed him.